Welcome back, Survivor fans. This is week 9 of Survivor Season 23 South Pacific. This is the Tribal Council podcast. With co-host Chris, I am Ralph, and we are here to recap all of the action from the first double elimination week of the season. Potentially more to come. I don't know.
Yeah, I was sort of caught off guard by that. It was funny, like, they suddenly were at the immunity challenge, like, 8 seconds after the intro song was over, and I was thrown off. I wasn't quite sure what to expect for the remainder of the episode. Would it be like immunity, vote out, and then close the episode with Redemption Island, which I would have been very disappointed with, I think.
You know, Probst mentioned that they weren't going to do the multiple people at Redemption Island anymore, so I'm wondering how they're going to handle this, if they're just going to do two challenges immediately, but that would seem to handicap whoever won the first challenge.
Assuming the first challenge has anything strenuous involved, you know, if they're playing memory like they did for one of those.
That's true. They could do that.
I would say that that's hardly a handicapping.
Yeah. And remember, Ozzy's eating good protein, so, you know, he is prepared for all of this.
Yeah. But yeah, I was intrigued a little bit if they might switch the episode organization around and move to votes early and Redemption Island challenges late, but I'm happy that they're sticking with, you know, closing episodes with votes. I guess what I was surprised about is that usually when there's a double elimination episode, it's teased in some way.
Ooh, it's late. Sorry.
Wow. We really are a no-editing podcast, aren't we?
No, yeah, that's getting left in.
I'll make sure I get a good belch in between now and the end of the episode.
So, the episode begins with Cochran getting, for some reason, allowing himself to be pulled aside by various members of his former tribe to get reamed for his decision that he made at the last Tribal Council, which, if I were him, I wouldn't bother, like, getting pulled aside. Like, what are you going to learn that you didn't already know? Like, that everyone hates your guts? That they think you stabbed them in the back? Like,
well, you know, it's a smart thing to do, though. You don't want to dig your feet in, because then you just are, you know, these are potential jury members, so you've ticked them off a little bit. You don't need to tick them off further.
Jim called it. He's playing a third-place game. He's playing to stay in the game. He's not playing to win the game. You know, people will want to take him along because he's hated pretty well, and no one on Survivor is really going to support him more than they would maybe one of their own, unless there's some bitterness involved. But
I disagree. I disagree. I think he can get votes from Dawn, or a vote from Dawn. It's not like she gets multiple. This isn't a Chicago election.
Well, maybe she's just a large state in the Electoral College. She gets multiple votes.
Sure. I mean, he's probably not going to get votes from Ozzy, Jim, Keith, or Whitney. although I think even Ozzy is a question mark. I mean, Ozzy's disappointed, but the thing is,
he's not taking it personally.
Yeah, exactly. He's not nuclear like Jim.
Or Whitney. Whitney's pretty nuclear.
But then again, I mean, ultimately, Jim owned up to it later on. You know, he admitted it. He's like, I said some immature things. You know, I was pissed off and I said some immature things, but, you know, the sentiment behind those things he still stands by.
Well, the only reason he said that is to try to get people to listen to him when he's trying to, like, make this speech about honor and
you mean owning up to his immaturity?
Yeah.
You're saying that's the only reason? Yeah,
he wouldn't have done it otherwise.
He started his hard sell nice and early in that tribal council.
No, he played it about as well as he could have. It was never going to work, but he played it as well as he could have.
I disagree a little bit. I mean, I think he gave a good hard sell. I think he pulls the rug out from underneath his sell, though, by not actually giving the immunity to Ozzy.
That's the dumbest thing in the world.
I think it's dumb, but it's also, I think it also has the potential to make an appeal. On the other hand, you know, ultimately Dawn and Whitney voted for Ozzy anyway. Right. And oh, by the way, where was the ire for them?
Wait, Whitney voted for Ozzy?
True story.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah. Ozzy only got, Cochran only got 2 votes in that.
I thought Dawn flipped, but not Whitney.
No, Dawn and Whitney both flipped.
Why? God, that's weird.
Well, Dawn had talked about flipping.
Yeah, I know, but why Whitney?
I don't know. Unfortunately, they didn't play the audio from her thing. Maybe I imagine you could probably get it off of CBS's website. I think they actually air, or they post the videos of all of the votes and the comments from the castaways, as they're placing their vote.
What are you guessing that Ozzy wrote on his car?
Could it be any simpler? I love that he did
it. Cochran?
What's that?
Cochran or just Cochran?
What?
Are you talking about Ozzy?
Are you joking? Those are your guesses.
It's C and then a blur.
Right. Hello, sucker.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah, there you go. there was no doubt in my mind that that's what he put on there.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Which I loved. I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, that's, if it's not the first, it's one of a very few times they've had the blur.
It's very rare. It's a very rare event.
Yeah. It's a slightly different approach than what Ralph was doing last season.
And drew little penises and things.
Right.
I guess we're a little fast forwarded, but yeah. I guess flashing back to the immunity challenge, I can't help but be mildly disgusted by the number of challenges that involve carrying things in one's mouth only to deposit them later somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh wait, you know, there was one thing I wanted to say about this, the rehash or with Cochran. You know, it's too little too late, but I was pleased at least to see that Ozzy has begun to learn the lessons of his past ways, and that in that he was measured with his words in the conversation that he had with Cochran. Like, you know, there was a huge dichotomy between the Ozzy conversation and the Jim and Whitney conversations with Cochran. You know, Ozzy just appealed to him. It was like, why did you do that? You know, that was disappointing. I mean, I felt like I stepped out there for you. You know, a couple challenges ago or a couple votes ago when it was pretty clear you were going to be the one to go home, and I feel like you kind of pulled the rug out from under me here. Like, it was very matter of fact, and he sort of appealed to Cochran rather than lambasting him. And I was impressed to see Ozzy not just go ballistic on him. The way you could easily have seen him go.
It takes a pretty big person to not take that personally. You know, like, you have to kind of like,
to not take Cochran's decision personally.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
It's understandable if you do, but like, you know, in the end, you got to see like, it's not about you. It's about him making this decision. And I understand his reasoning about, you know, and he played the card that he has. He's like, I've been preparing myself mentally 11 years for this, and I didn't want to come down to whether or not rocks. I pulled the purple rock. From the bag.
Right. No, yeah. And Ozzy, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that I think that Ozzy didn't take it personally. I think he did. I just think he did a good job of measuring his words and keeping his head in the game. You know, that going off on him there gets him nowhere and, in fact, you know, causes more damage to an already, on life support game, you know?
I mean, yeah, I guess if you're talking about for a jury vote situation, I guess that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, just even with Cochran or with the other members of Upolu. I mean, if Ozzy's able to eventually make it to the end, like, he's going to come out looking a lot better than Jim and Whitney did because, you know, he had a civil conversation with Cochran instead of, you know, just chewing him out. I mean, and then, of course, Brandon coming over was kind of comical. I mean, Brandon has become like this. I feel like I'm watching, like, with Brandon and Cochran, I feel like I'm watching a Lifetime movie or something about bullies and nerds or something. Like, you know, the bully who, like, you know, realized the wrongs of his ways and now is, like, befriending the nerds and is their protectorate or something, you know.
He comes over and he's like, I just want to make sure no one's getting aggressive towards my guy. Like,
yeah, it's hilarious.
Please.
It's hilarious, but on the other hand, it's it's perfect. This is further examples of what I was saying last time. It's giving Cochran exactly what he needs to feel like he's a part of their group, even though ultimately, you know, I would think, although who knows, maybe they really do see him as another.
He's an asset. He's a guy you can bring to the end, and you hope he doesn't like repair too many relationships before he gets to the end.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you'd think he is the seventh person in that alliance now, but who knows?
The dynamics in that alliance are a little weird, you know, with Albert and Sophie kind of trying to do their thing, and coaches, you know, blind allegiance to Brandon and Edna.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird group.
Yeah. And Rick just sort of nodding silently in the corner. Right?
What about Rick?
Rick, sort of fittingly, he's like the cowboy from Mulholland Drive or something. Like, you don't even know why he's there. But he's there.
You're citing pictures I've not seen yet.
Oh, well, I'll save you the trouble. You'll be confused.
What's his name? David... the director.
David something, you're right. It's David, it's not Mamet.
Whatever.
It's the other guy. David, I can't remember his name.
Twin Peaks, it's the same guy, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Blue Velvet, I think he did also. The movie, the best way to describe it is, it's like a Mobius strip of a storyline. That's the best thing I can come up with.
And I'll leave it at that.
And it still doesn't, I still don't even know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Okay, so immunity challenge, they're spitting out stuff.
We don't need to roll into that. We can.
I just remember looking at it when I first started watching, I was just like, I was impressed with how long it seemed like that was going to take. I mean,
and then it didn't.
I think it did. I think it just edited it out. I mean, I gotta imagine that was probably minimum 10 trips back and forth of spitting out water,
reason why Sophie would be vomiting at the end,
right?
Exhaustion and not wanting to hold coconut water in her mouth anymore.
Well, and she also actually looked like she was... She didn't need a whole lot to finish that one off, and it looked like she just took a ton in
there.
She
should have just vomited into it.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised that when people were spitting out that they weren't, like, hanging out over there a little longer and just going like...
Gagging themselves.
You know? Just start hawking loogies in there.
Ugh.
So, Jim... Wait a minute. You're jumping immunity. You jumped immunity challenges. The first you skipped the first immunity challenge, which was, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh no! That's right. That's right. Ozzy got voted out on the first immunity challenge the first tribal council when Jim won immunity. That's right. My bad. Which was at the milk spitting contest.
Coconut spill. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're on to challenge two.
We're putting on a clinic on how to host a podcast right now, by the way.
Again, you know, 19 listeners, you know, can't be wrong. all right, so second immunity challenge.
What about the 6,999,999,981 others?
We haven't recruited the 7 billionth baby yet. We'll get to her.
Okay.
So, second challenge, the classic, you can fight for your immunity or you can eat. And
Yes. This
is perfect in a situation where one tribe has the control, if only to just reveal a little something about the people involved. You know, I always like it when, like...
Well, shine a spotlight on the rift.
Shine a spotlight on the rift, and, you know, if there's a person who stands their ground and says, you know, I find it abominable to not fight for immunity, like, I kind of like that too, you know?
Yeah, except we didn't get that.
Well, Coach didn't
want to... He was the most eligible, yeah.
Coach was politically, like, not wanting to make anyone look bad. So, you know, from his point of view, as much as he didn't want to do it, he wanted to also not make the people in his tribe look bad. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
You mean by him participating
by him
in the
competing
challenge
and then, like,
the
trying to make
one?
Some sort of moral stance against not competing.
Yeah, that was interesting.
If you gave him a choice between having that kind of challenge or one where everyone competes, obviously he would have chosen the one where everyone competes. But given that this is what was on the table, it certainly seemed like for him, it made the most sense to not stir the bucket and compete while Jeff sits there and asks questions of everyone else, like, hey, look at, you know, your leader up there, and he's competing, and you're not.
Well, the thing that I thought was so funny is it was like, he made that statement, and then it was just sort of like, very quickly, foregone conclusion. Nobody is nobody who feels comfortable is participating in the challenge. And I thought that was, I thought it was odd how quickly that decision was come to.
Well, I think for the overwhelming majority of that tribe, I think it was a no-brainer. It was just, you know, really for him and maybe, I don't know, what, Hans? I don't even think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I just thought, I don't know. Like, that was, it was just odd to me that that was the only comment that was made, and I guess maybe some other stuff was edited out, but it just felt very discontinuous. Like, you know, Coach expresses some internal conflict about it, and then, okay, who's participating? And only three hands go up, and it was like, okay, clearly it wasn't that much of a conflict. You know, that resolved itself pretty quickly.
What you were robbed of is the shot afterwards of the six of them lying around camp, just holding their stomachs.
Right. By the way, what was with the mutual feeding going on? That was a little
bit
weird.
Edna feeding Rick was so good. It was like a precious little moment.
They were all doing it. I mean, Cochran was feeding Brandon, or maybe vice versa, and then he was like nestling his head in his shoulder. There's like a little bit of
frosting in his mustache, and Edna's like trying to shove cake in his mouth, and it's so cute because like, A, we never get to see Rick, and B, he's got that mustache and is, like, covered in frosting. It was like, oh, I absolutely loved it. Every single minute, I was like, they're doing this right. Like, they're covering the ridiculousness that's going on over there while three people are, like, clinging to immunity, trying to hold this silly ball in a bow, and I'm sure they're like, gotta hate this so much.
Yeah, I was a little weirded out by all that. So should we move to the tribal council?
Well, no, we're sorry. I wish I jumped a little sooner and not left that pregnant pause. But there's the moment where Probst says,
"You could always get Plan B, and we can nip that pregnancy in the bud."
Jim will have no shot today at immunity, and Jim's like, "I know."
Oh yeah, that we Jim wears his heart on his sleeve. I mean, he wears most of his internal organs on his sleeve. That's how emotional he is.
Is someone going to say, like, he wears his, you know, spleen on his sleeve? Yeah. Like, is that a thing now? Like,
well,
what would that show about him?
You could do, like, you know, for, like, you know, for total alcoholics, they could wear their liver on their sleeve. Right?
He wears his adrenal gland on his sleeve.
Yeah. Yeah. People who go to the bathroom a lot, he wears his bladder on his sleeve. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, our subject of our game is online. Are you seeing this?
The subject of our game is online?
The one you were looking for earlier. Your fellow teacher?
What?
Never mind. I'm on Google Mail. I'm on Gmail, so I'm like seeing who's online. And,
oh, okay. Yeah. Once again, we're putting on a clinic on how to host a podcast
again,
here.
You know, if they've stuck around this long,
yeah.
The
title,
okay,
of this episode is going
guys,
to be How Not to Host a Podcast.
This is
period.
A test. How loyal are you? Will you put up with this? And if you will.
Goodness.
You're amazing.
We're actually taking the Brandon Hans approach to podcasting. We're going to just like, we're just going to, you know, air all the dirty laundry, do all the things you're not supposed to do, and just see how long you and Coach are going to hang around listening to this podcast. All right, get on board. Coach has the immunity idol. He's going to be loyal to us. Are you? Will you be one of the warrior spirits?
10 of us in this podcast listening room have been played this game with honor.
The alliance must stay strong, okay? Yeah. Don't give in to the Rob Sister Nino podcast. Don't flip on the revote. Stay strong.
Don't go to This American Life.
Well, I hardly call them a competition for us.
Yeah, but hey, if I had a choice between our
maybe
podcast
I should reword
and
that.
American
I hardly
Life.
Call us competition for them.
Right. There you go.
That might be the proper way to put it.
We should have Ira Glass on as a guest.
Yeah. I mean, they are based out of Chicago, right? So, I mean,
exactly.
We've got a better shot than, say, the Survivor podcast being broadcast out of Waco, Texas or something.
Hey, Baylor is a serious place for Survivor podcasting.
It's possible. All right, so bringing this derailed train back onto the tracks. What's next, Ralph?
Dawn. Dawn is next.
What about Dawn? You're doing an awesome job of hosting today, Ralph.
I know. I'm throwing it out there. So Dawn is playing the game of I have to play both sides in order to maximize my survivability and chances to win this game. And thus is, you know, she's like inviting Coach into bed.
Yeah, that was
she's telling
weird.
Everyone to keep eating. Like
that was like weird, like pseudo flirtation with Coach.
It's sort of flirty, but yeah. She's still kind of hot, so it's all right.
Right. I'm going to get back in there with you, Coach. Don't worry.
Oh, don't worry, Coach.
Oh, that was just strange to me. And it's really funny. I think, you know,
a confessional of Edna being like, that bee better get off my man. Like real Springer, like
you want to get some like Real Housewives of the South Pacific going on here.
Very good, that's good.
Yeah, I think Dawn is like having a little buyer's or seller's remorse, whatever you want to call it,
on not jumping with Cochran.
From her decision from last week. You know, she was like
it made no sense. She needed to go with Cochran.
Well, yeah, if only
she's the only
one
that knows which way the wind is blowing, then she has to go with it.
Exactly. Then put your sail out and enjoy the breeze.
Right.
And, yeah, she had a chance.
And instead, she's got Albert, like, wondering what her motives are and wanting to get her.
Yeah, Albert, whose radar is way up.
Way up.
And on point. You know, it's funny. This is actually possibly going to end up getting her out faster. You know, I guess it ends up not. I mean, at this point now, it just comes down to whether or not Whitney or Dawn happen to win immunity.
Do you see any Upolu going before Whitney and Dawn?
No, I don't think so. Because I think
it's just like the season before, right?
Yeah, I mean. The only way, I mean, here's the thing that I think could be really good, is if somehow Albert and Sophie flipped. I mean, the only problem is that there's this huge rift between Cochran and Whitney. Dawn, it doesn't matter. Dawn will do whatever. Dawn, I think, is fine with what Cochran did.
Dawn just wants to be on the majority side, for once.
That too. But with 9 people left, you only need 5. And if Cochran, you know, Cochran would only need to bring 2 Upolu people over to the 3 remaining Savais. I keep doing it, Savaians. I'm going to go with that. Savaians. Like Hawaiians.
Yeah, like Hawaiians. Good. Yeah.
And then, you know, if he could bring, like, and Albert and Sophie seem to be the most eligible just in terms of, you know, a nicely packaged twosome. You know, put the two of them with Dawn, Whitney, and Cochran. That could get interesting. You know, especially with Cochran being, you know, at this point, as much Upolu as he is Savaian. Upolanese? Upoluan? I don't know.
What's a place that ends in a U?
I don't know. I can't think of any.
Peru. Peruvian. So it'd be
Upoluvian?
Upoluvian.
Upoluvian.
I'm okay with that.
Alright, Upoluvians and
see, I don't know. The placement of the vowels is all
yeah,
again,
there's too many syllables.
This is not why we're here.
Oh, suddenly somebody's a slave to getting this podcast right.
You know, we have an agenda, Chris.
Not privy to any such agenda.
What'd you think of Jim's little play that he drew up in the sand?
Oh, I loved it.
I was
thrilled with him having an island PowerPoint presentation for Albert and Sophie.
Fantastic. You know, I love the professionalism with Albert and Sophie taking him. They're like, they know they're not going to take it, but they have to go over there and entertain it.
No, yeah, they entertain it. You know, it's always politicking. You know,
they're so professional, those two. I really enjoy it. I would like to see one of them make the final three. It would make for a better finale.
Yeah. I want to go back to the first tribal council real quick. I think...
Why not? We've done everything out of order, so why not?
Yeah, exactly. What I'm impressed with about this tribal council is, A, I feel like this is like... This was one of the hardest sells we've ever seen at a tribal council. To get the dominating alliance to vote a different way. You know, usually people lay down for it. They're just sort of like resigned to it. What could we do? You know, yada, yada. And I think, you know, the only one that comes to mind other than this one is, Stephanie is LaGrossa, I think was her name, in the Survivor Palau season when she was the only one that came over from that tribe. And then there was, oh, I can't think of her name. It was a funky name. It was a short, very, like, somewhat ethnic name. She didn't want to play at all. She was not interested in Survivor anymore and had checked out completely. And they were still going to vote off Stephanie and string out the woman who didn't care. And Stephanie, like, just absolutely pleaded with everybody at Tribal Council. And it's the only other time I can think of.
I want to play, she doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
But that would only encourage me to vote off the one who wanted to play. I want to play with someone who doesn't want to play. That's who I want to play with.
Right. No, yeah. Oh, well, no, you're right. I mean,
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Just something that flashed in my head. Like, why wouldn't a dominant majority alliance dispatch, you know, enough people to go to the other side, agree on a flip, and then just not go through on their, you know, their threat? Because wouldn't it pacify the minority tribe if you went over there and told them, yeah, this is what's going to happen, and we'll go with you and sell it? And then just pacify them into not, you know, trying to scheme anything more serious. Like,
I don't quite understand what the question
is. You know, like, the problem with the minority tribe is that they will throw whatever slings and arrows they can to try to disrupt the unity on your majority tribe, right?
Okay.
So why not you as a majority tribe dispatch a small enough group to that minority tribe and, you know, say that we want to betray someone who hasn't been dispatched, and just at least get them thinking, like, there's a plan in place that will allow you to stay just to pacify them from throwing all the rocks and arrows that they're going to do at tribal
council.
Offer
them a placebo.
Yeah, tell them this is what you're going to do, and then never do it. Like, you know, at least for 1 week where you're, like, worried about...
Because we've seen how that works out. This is what... Because you just described the plan that was hatched 3 weeks ago with Cochran, and then what happens is your dispatched group suddenly actually flips.
Yeah, but that was different because they sent someone who didn't feel any sort of attachment to the group he was with to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if he had sent a Jim, it could have been done.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The funny thing is actually, I loved that Jim actually pointed this out at the beginning of the episode. He said, he's like, we gave him exactly what he wanted. We gave him the opportunity to be this double agent. And I loved it because I loved that he said it. Unfortunately, it seemed more like a passing comment than any sort of, like, epiphany.
It didn't resonate with anyone.
Right. I don't think it even resonated with himself. But he's hit the nail on the head. It's like you made this bed for yourself. You picked the person that was not the right person to send on this little mission because they were not going to be loyal. And you gave him the opportunity to play this double agent role, and he ended up playing the crap out of it because, you know, it actually reminds me of a scenario in the not too distant past where where I was in such a role, and I just brought everybody in on the ruse, and we all started, you know. What Cochran did was, is he brought in Upolu on the ruse, and now it got to the point, and then it becomes, everybody knows that there's some sort of ruse going on, and so now you don't even have to worry about, you know, whether or not someone's radar is going to go off, because everybody turns the blind eye.
Right.
Because they all want the ruse to go smoothly. They just don't realize, you know, who the ruse is really on. And
I'm so emotionally devastated by what you're bringing up again. Thank you.
For the listeners out there, Ralph may or may not have had the wool pulled over his eyes on a prank that he actually helped
I was
birth.
The genesis of it, yes.
Yes. And yeah. Then actually fell victim to the very prank he helped birth.
There was a texting malfunction involved, but that's okay.
But nonetheless.
I've moved beyond it. Clearly Chris is not. But you know what? If I was him, I would not move on either. So, whatever. What's left?
Not a whole lot. There was, the final tribal council. So we've got the eating challenge. Whitney comes up with immunity. Dawn looks like she's suddenly ending up in being welcomed into the Upolu group. Albert is sharp and realizes that that's not a good thing. He needs to nip it in the bud. And now we're at tribal council again. And Brandon is... Brandon just needs to... this guy, they gotta get a muzzle for Brandon.
No, I like it. It was amusing. I was entertained by what... He was trying to call out Dawn for contradicting herself, and I guess
Except she didn't!
No, she didn't, but at the same time, it definitely showed that she's backpedaling and trying her damnedest to entertain both sides.
That's actually true. You're right about that.
Talking out both sides of her mouth. So, I mean, while she may not have contradicted herself, it accomplished what they were trying to do, which is to show that she...
Yeah, I guess it shines a spotlight, yeah.
Well, whoever... You know, will serve her best interest, which is never a redeeming quality.
Yeah.
Not when it comes to jury votes, at least.
I just thought, you know, ultimately what he's doing is he's questioning whether or not Dawn is genuine. And I just feel, I mean, that's such a losing battle. I mean, she's ultimately a very genuine person, I feel like. You know, even in this, like, little game of welcoming Coach into the hut to lay down and all that sort of stuff, like, she's still a very genuine person, you know? Like, this is like, I don't know, this is like questioning the coaching chops of Phil Jackson or Red Auerbach or something, you know? He lost some games here, let's be honest, you know? I mean, like, what? You know? like really, we're gonna question Dawn's, like, how genuine she is? I mean, that she's probably the most genuine person out there on that island right now.
Yeah, she is.
So, I mean, well, perhaps short of Brandon, but Brandon is just like... Brandon's genuine in a completely different way.
Brandon's genuine to the multiple personalities that are arguing in his head.
Right, yeah. Brandon's genuine in a, like, I'm not even aware enough as to what's going on to be able to not be genuine.
What was your reaction to Whitney's little breakdown?
You know, well, it's interesting, because, like, I understand where she's coming from. The breakdown, I don't know. I mean, I imagine that as much the elements as it is the what she described that caused that. You know, it's just the stress of being out there for however long, and then having
and her chances at $1 million slipping away.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she talked about how she's just wasted 6 weeks of her life out there, which and Cochran's to blame for that. And I, you know, whatever. That's just being.
I mean, if you're going to be the kind of person who doesn't take anything from this game if you don't win $1 million, then I feel sorry for you, you know, like, it's an amazing experience any way you cut it, you know?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you on that. Oh, no, those comments I completely cast aside because it's just her and Jim having a little pout party together.
Speaking of comments cast aside, like, when she starts talking about how they didn't even treat us like people, like, come on, like, what did you expect, you know, there to happen? Like, would you want to be patronized and being like, we're really sorry, but we're voting you out tonight? Like that game has never been played. Like, you know, this game is, you know, you will do what it takes. There's, eight, you know, 16 of you step on the island. Only one of you is leaving with that money. And it's, you know, this is the way it's going to go down. So I don't even understand why people get bent out of shape about not being treated like human beings. Like, they're not, like, housing them off to the side. It's not like other seasons where, like, food's not being shared. Like, there's none of those issues coming up. So I don't know why she's getting all bent out of shape about that.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that. I mean, I just think it's really funny. I mean, this actually strikes me a lot like, the thing that comes to mind is, like, you know, the two sides of, like, a breakup, a relationship breakup. And, like, that perfectly level-headed people can, you know, depending on who they happen to be friends with from a breakup, they end up, the other just ends up automatically being cast as this villain, where had they been friends with the other member of the breakup, then the first person would have ended up being cast as the villain. You know, like, it's like, there's just no perspective from anybody here. Nobody has the ability to step outside the game, like, and I don't mean that to be sound so metaphysical or whatever, but, like, just has the ability to detach themselves from the game for a moment and realize, hey, wait a minute, we're all in the same situation, and we all are just seeing it from opposite sides of a line. That's all it is, you know? Like, Brandon makes it sound like they were all chesty, and they were all, you know, cocky coming into the merge, and Ozzy won on Redemption Island and all this stuff, and now look at them, and, like, oh, but Upolu was not at all chesty or talking about, you know, how God has been on their side in winning challenges or anything else. You know, like, it's just this, it's a complete lack of perspective on Brandon's part. I mean, I'm not even going to accuse all of Upolu of it, because Brandon's the only one who really said anything, like, to that end. But,
well, I'm glad he's there, because, you know what, Edna's not saying anything, Rick's not saying anything, Sophie's not saying a whole lot, so I'm glad there's someone on the tribe who's willing to step out and say something, at least, you know, out there.
Yeah, I mean, this sort of gets to the heart of the problem, I think, that you've talked about before with Survivor's casting. You know, like, you were, who was it you were ripping? Was it Rick you were ripping as a cast member choice?
I could rip multiple people on this cast.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
But the thing is ultimately, you know, if you're gonna pick these a bunch of wonderful game players, you're not going to get anything to put on television, because they're all going to know how to politic. You know, you're going to get a dozen Boston Robs sitting at tribal council while Jeff tries to question them, and he just sits there, well, Jeff, you know, it takes more than one person to vote out somebody from Survivor. You know, like,
yeah, no, I get that, because, you know, like, if that were the case, like, Amazing Race should be only, you know, recruiting, like, Olympic athletes to actually participate in a race around the world. But, you know, you cast people who have some, like, you know, physical, you know, impairments, who will stumble, and their stumbles make them, you know, interesting to watch. That's just like with Survivor, you have to cast people who will stick their foot in their mouth, because that makes for excellent tribal council.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing that
always killed me about, like, I don't know, some of these game shows where, like, it's a trivia game show, I'm like, you got idiots on that show. Like, how could you possibly expect them to succeed if, like, they're clearly stupid? But that's the drama, is that, like, you take this person who's, like, not very bright and, like...
Are you referring to the Smarter Than a Fifth Grader game show?
That's definitely part of it. I have a real issue with that show, but, like, that's a comment for another time. I don't know.
Yeah, well, fortunately, that show was fairly short-lived, if I recall correctly. But the only other big thing I wanted to note about this is I liked Ozzy's attitude going into the tribal council, where he basically knew he was going to be going home. Actually, also, I thought it was real interesting that Jim, you know, seemed to give decent consideration to the idea of giving Ozzy the immunity idol at that first tribal council. I couldn't help but think, you know, is there a degree to which this is karma for Ozzy? Like, you know, the trying to take one for the team to help solidify their six going into the merge by going to Redemption Island voluntarily. You know, was this, is this sort of, you know, karma coming back around to him, and now he's gonna get, now he's gonna benefit from it. And obviously, it didn't be the, end up being that way. But you know, I can't help but think that, you know, Jim gave that more, much more consideration because of what Ozzy did, than he would have had Ozzy not done, done that sort of somewhat gallant gesture of going to Redemption Island, quote unquote, for the tribe.
I don't know. You lost me somewhere in there. it got bent around. I don't know.
Well, all that said, I liked Ozzy's attitude. I mean, Ozzy's had something going for him that most people don't. Most people tend not to have going for them when they go to Redemption Island, and it's happened for him both times now. And that's that he's basically known he was going to be going anyway, and so instead of like getting down about it or like trying to scramble and then having that backfire or whatever, he's instead embracing it and going in with an absolutely positive attitude. I really think that's huge for him. I mean, he ended up slaughtering Christine in that Redemption Island challenge, and you could make arguments for that there were other reasons he slaughtered her, who knows. But, I mean, going in with a positive mindset versus going in with a, like, God, I just got voted out, that blows mindset, I think makes a huge difference, right? I mean...
Yeah, the power of positive thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's doing it again, and he's... I'm optimistic for him because... You got to think it gives him an edge over Keith, who was, you know, had no idea he was going to be going home, and over Jim, who just seems defeated. You know, like Jim, you know, just sort of was resigned to it when he got voted out.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I guess we'll see how that plays out. You know, from here on forward.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting the moment Coach had with Ozzy as well, before he got voted out. You know, Coach, it was this weird, you know, it's that kinship of the returning players.
You and I and these rookies out here.
Right. I mean, it's not nearly, you know, I don't think it's remotely the dichotomy that you had last season with...
Yeah. Boston, you know, Robin Russell.
Rob and Russell, who were just head and shoulders above the rest of that cast, whereas here, you're talking about two players who are not known for their strategy. So it's not like they're going to be head and shoulders above them on that in that respect. But, you know, it was an interesting moment, and then, of course, you know, Coach being literally a coach, you know, can't help but to try to be a coach for Ozzy there. You know, no, you're going to do well. You're going to, you know, like, I don't know. It seemed like a fairly genuine moment, from a person who seems like most of his moments are, you know, hatched simply for the camera.
Right. Yeah. It's just him pontificating on his greatness for a while.
Right. Right. You know, the last thing I want to comment on, and this has nothing to do with this episode, but it suddenly hit me. You know, one of the things I used to love about Survivor was, and you've hit on this before, is that finality of when you're voted out, that's it, you're out, and you're just like, you're left feeling like, oh man, like that, you have this bitter taste in your mouth, you know, you maybe were blindsided or you had somebody turn on you or whatever, and that's how you leave the game instead of telling this story of, like, I came out here to find out who I am to Jeff as you toss your buff into a fire. And along with that, for me, the torch snuff used to always be accompanied by that tribal singing, the second he snuffed the torch, like, all the voices go into, like, come into unison, just going, oh, like this very, like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it was such a perfectly poignant musical accompaniment to that moment that now is gone, because instead what they have replaced it with, and it's appropriate considering the setting, but it's this, like, jovial little, like, fluty clarinet-y music that's like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, because, like, now they're off on their little gallivant to get over to Redemption Island and go save yourself, and, like, it's...
Wow, Chris, that's not the least of my complaints against, you know, this whole Redemption Island twist, but thank you for summarizing the audio-visual...
Right, the synergy
issues
of it all.
That people would have with this problem.
Well, I mean, but that was... I loved that. I loved that. It's the O's when you get voted out. It was so poignant, and it was I don't know.
Again, there are bigger issues than the O's that go with the torch snuff, but I understand. You're preaching to the choir, okay?
Yeah.
You're preaching to the choir.
All right,
where can they find us, Chris?
They can find us on Twitter. The handle is Tribal Podcast. And they can email us. The email address is podcast@tc.vanby.net. No questions have come in yet for us to address in our podcast. So the Anyvember promotion is still going on. By the way, I'll have you know, there was a category on Jeopardy, it was either yesterday or today, I can't remember which, called Yesvember, as opposed to November.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I mean, hey, roll your eyes, groan all you want. I find Yesvember much more palatable than Anytober. Because Yesvember makes sense. You replaced no with yes. There's some sort of...
But you can get any sub for $5, Chris. Anytober.
Why isn't it Octenibur?
Because that sounds ridiculous.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, right. Who's the panel for ridiculousness?
You know, we appreciate the three of you who have stuck around through this malaise of ridiculousness. And we hope that all three of you will return next week and bring 4,000 of your closest friends. And, you know, we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.